Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the IOWomen.com podcast. I'm Danielle Bernstein. This week's podcast is a two-parter as I talk to Penn State coach Missy Doherty about her team's big upset win over Florida last weekend. In the second part, I talk with ESPN analyst Courtney Connor about stalling in the women's game and what should be done in the offseason in regards to rule changes. Obviously, this is a huge win for you guys and just a big development in the overall 2013 season. What was your game plan going into the matchup with Florida, particularly, two great offenses going against each other and defensively for you guys in particular, containing what they have offensively?
Yeah, I mean, we're just trying to stop their best scorers. I mean, it's hard to key in on one or two or even three Florida attackers because everyone can really score. So, instead of taking, this person's on this person approach, we just took more of a team approach. We were ready to swarm the ball when it came in, ready to flood the eight when they were coming to goal. And I think our team did a pretty good job of making them go for their second or third option on offense and not just kind of getting in on their very first option.
And particularly in the second half, you guys were excellent defensively, held them to just three shots. What were some of the other things that you guys were able to do to have that kind of success? And, some other weird things I know you had mentioned before at the end, Florida pulling their goalie and stuff like that, just the overall developments that happened in that second half.
Yeah, I mean, they were successful on offense. Once we got down there, I mean, I just think the key of the game was getting the draw controls. We just our freshmen did a great job, Jenna Muschetti, Allie Heavens, and Madison Sear, of getting the ball on the draw circle. So when we went to cage and we scored, we were able to get the ball back down there and then have a good possession and score again. So the best way to keep them from scoring is defense, and the second thing is to not let them get the ball down on attack. So that was probably our best defense, was having a disciplined offense that game.
And overall, how big is this win for you guys? I know it's the first time you guys have beat them in program history, which I do realize is an exaggerated statistic considering they've only been around for 4 years, but I know overall people seem to be hesitant to put too much emphasis on one win, but I mean, when you look at it, what does it mean for your team?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely excited about the win. I mean, Florida is a huge rival for us because of conference game, and obviously because they're, one of the top teams in the country. But, we really just want to have a good season. It was a great win. It was a great feeling, a bit of a confidence booster that, we can stick to our game plan. And even if it's not going right away, if we stick to it, it'll work out. And I think that helps build the confidence of some of the young players and, kind of keeps you from panicking maybe when you're in a future position like that. But with our schedule, it was a great win, but our schedule really doesn't lend itself to like having one great win and then it's going to be easy street. I mean, we're going into Northwestern this week, then we still have Ohio State, Hopkins, Princeton on our schedule, Lehigh, Lafayette. So there's really no time to think you're better than you were before we played Florida. I mean, we're on the same team and we have to be able to compete for the remainder of these games.
Kind of moving into some overall things about your team this season, I kind of feel like, at least I've tended to think about your offense as being very attack-dominated with Maggie McCormick and Mackenzie Sear, but your midfield seems to have really stepped up a lot, particularly in the last couple of games. How important is it to you guys offensively to have that balance between your midfield and your attack?
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. I think, Maggie got face guarded a lot last year. So one of our focuses for this year's offense is to really branch out a little bit and not rely on her solely to, feed the passes or have all of our offense run through her. And the girls and particularly, the freshmen coming in have stepped up in the midfield. And I think, as we grow through the season, our younger players are just getting more experience under their belt and they're starting to feel more comfortable about certain situations, and that's hard to, you can't really coach that. They just kind of have to go through some things. So I think the Florida game was a good stepping stone for the young players to experience a game like that, to remain confident, and be ready to go given any situation.
And wanted to ask you a little bit about that freshman class, because they have been outstanding this season. You mentioned Allie Heavens, Jenna Muschietti, Michaela Sear also. I do want to ask you about Emmy Smith as well, but has that overall as a group, have they exceeded your expectations?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we knew they were strong coming in, and you know, we knew they could contribute quickly, which they've done. You know, you always wonder from, you know, the role player to the impact player, kind of where they'll fall in as a young player. You know, a lot of people will come in and they'll do a great job, and then they'll get older and become more impact players. But thankfully, for us, you know, our freshmen have come in and made an impact right away in a lot of different areas. You know, to top it off, you know, the sophomores came from the freshman year. Now they've gotten better. I mean, Kelly Lechner has been such a huge player for us all year, making huge contributions on the draw circle and, you know, at the offensive end, that, you know, it's nice to see not only the freshmen coming in, but some of the returning players really stepping up.
Right. And focusing on the attack just a little bit, just because I do think they're so dynamic, and particularly with McCormick and Sear, who are also dynamite shooters. They do that two-man game kind of around the crease. That's really fun to watch, I guess, you know, from a fan perspective. Can you talk about their overall development and why they seem to complement each other so well?
Yeah, I mean, they just, you know, Maggie's a great feeder. You know, she just has a great knack for putting the ball in the right spot. You know, again, it's like you can't take too much credit for that as a coach, because she just came in with that ability to, you know, put the ball into space or right on the person's stick. And then, you know, Mackenzie just has kind of great game sense. She sees the field well. She sees things kind of right before they're about to happen. So the combination of having the two of them be so good at the game sense side of stuff around the crease has been great. You know, we've been challenging them to think about some different things around the crease, so it's not always the same thing. You know, we face different defenses, so that's going to change up what we're kind of doing. You know, Maggie has been face guarded in some games, so we've given them additional things to think about. So, but they just respond really well to the situation. And, you know, I think now that we have those middies and, you know, the one-on-one options from the top, it alleviates those two a little bit, because it's not like you were going to them and it's like, you have to score. We have no other options. You know, we can work some hard options, and the team might be, you know, really concentrate on the one-on-ones up top, and then we're able to hit Maggie on the crease.
Right. Almost lets you like breathe a little bit more as an offense.
Exactly, yeah.
Moving on to the defensive side of the ball a little bit, heading into the season, I know you got Colleen Shea back, but lost Lizzie Carney before the season even started to an ACL. What adjustments defensively did you guys have to make as a result of kind of all that happening?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wish there was like some adjustment we could make to make up for Lizzie being gone, but there was really not. I mean, she's just a fantastic player, you know, a fantastic leader. So we just miss her, period. You know, she's just a great person to have on the field. You know, but we just had to ask a little bit more of our young players. You know, we had a lot of people vying for those low defense positions. It's changed every couple games on who we're putting in there, depending on who we're playing. And, you know, we've just had to ask a lot of people to grow up pretty quick. And we're still learning and growing on the defensive end. You know, we keep getting better, but you know, some of the game type of settings you can't always mimic in practice. You know, obviously we prepare from a scouting sense for the other team, but there's certain things that come up that they just have to react to. And I think as they get more games under their belt, they're more prepared to react to certain things, whether it's our middies on defense or whether it's our low defenders.
Well, I feel like some of those, you know, adjustments that you'd have to make defensively is also kind of compounded by having a different starter in Cage as well, without Dana Cahill there and Emmy Smith coming in. How do you think she's done so far in kind of filling those shoes, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously Dana was, you know, an All-American goalkeeper, and she did a great job for us last year. And it's a tall order for a freshman to come in Cage and have to start right away and be relied on so heavily. But the best thing about Emmy is she just keeps getting better and better. You know, obviously from any goalkeeper, you can never ask for perfection, but, you know, she works extremely hard. She's very competitive, and, you know, she's been a big reason we've been able to, you know, keep the other team out. And it's just been fun to see her from the fall till now just get a little bit better and then a little bit better. So if she keeps on the track, she's going to continue to do a great job for us.
Right, and that's all you can really ask for from a freshman goalie who's kind of thrown into the mix. Well, like you said, you alluded to it a little bit earlier. Obviously, want to dive in a little bit more, but you guys took down Florida. You have Northwestern up next. Quite the pairing for back-to-back matchups. Get them both over with at the same time. But heading up to Evanston for this one, what do you guys have to do to beat Northwestern, I guess, to put it simply?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, composure is a big, is an important factor when you play a team like Northwestern. You know, they're high pressure. They like to control the game. So, you know, the more we can handle the pressure and do the simple things well, the more we're able to stay in the game. You know, if we start to let the pressure get to us a little bit, that's when you start to make sort of simple mistakes. And, you know, we just want to bring our best, you know, to believe that we can win. And, you know, thankfully, I think we have a good scoring offense. So, you know, hopefully we can put some balls in the cage and you know, defensively just have another team effort like we did against Florida.
And I guess taking that even a little bit further, you mentioned earlier a couple more conference games left, some other bigger games as well. Overall, for the rest of the season, what are some of the focuses for you guys going to be on yourself and things that you're going to be working on, particular areas you want to improve on throughout the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as you get better as a program, you know, I think going into games, you have to be prepared that the other team is really gunning for you, you know, and it's kind of that emotional thing we have to be ready for the rest of our games. You know, it was great having a big win against Florida, but now people know that and they're going to be coming to knock us off too. So, you know, being prepared to handle that emotion from the other team is going to be important. You know, I think from the field standpoint, just continuing to get better, you know, keep giving our young players as much experience as possible. You know, we only have four seniors and, you know, so they've been called on to do a lot, but, you know, keep giving them those experiences and just keep getting better in all the little aspects.
Right, and kind of wanted to get your thoughts also on, I guess, overall just women's Division I lacrosse. It definitely, I would think this year above all recent years even seems like there's more, you know, every week there's a change in the polls or a team beating or some sort of upset, something like that going on. Do you see an increase in the parity in the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been awesome. You know, I think there's so many teams out there that are doing such a good job, and, you know, that's the challenge for all the teams now is to really know that every game is up for grabs. And, you know, there's no, like, you know, these teams are always just going to run the table. You know, there's really a lot of competition, and it's really fun to play the schedule that we've been playing because obviously we're in the ALC for our conference, so we're playing you know, top 20 teams every conference game, but, you know, we're also playing the Maryland's and Loyola and Virginia. So, you know, playing those games, there's really no rest for the weary.
Right.
But, you know, for a women's lacrosse player, it's awesome, you know, because you're going into every game really getting the most out of your college experience when you play games like that. You know, you're not just going through college with, like, oh, you know, we beat them. You know, it's really nice to see the competitiveness and the parity.
Absolutely. Well, Missy, thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciate it. Always great to hear about what you guys have going on over in State College. So I appreciate it, and best of luck the rest of the season.
No problem. Take care.
In the second part of the podcast, Courtney Connor and I take a little break from our typical game analysis and talk about stalling in the women's game and how prevalent it's become, as well as any potential rule changes that could be down the line, as this year is a rule change year in women's lacrosse. Now we're bringing in analyst Courtney Connor, who we've had a few times, more than a few times here on the Isle Women podcast, but kind of going to switch gears a little bit in terms of what we're talking about. Courtney, today kind of want to focus a little bit on stalling in the women's game. Obviously, it's been a hot topic, especially recently, and wanted to get your thoughts. I guess, you know, first off, this is something that seems to have really come under fire over the past couple seasons, particularly after last year's championship game. You obviously played at Maryland. Was this a topic of conversation then as well?
You know, it was, even from the time I was a player to my first few years into coaching, around the same time that boundaries were coming in. You know, at Maryland, we had teams stall against us. You know, even Virginia, who we would play in a national championship game. Gosh, out of my 5 years, I felt like we played them 2 out of the 3 championships. and they would stall to try and keep the score low in season. And I remember thinking, okay, when is the coach going to give us a signal to go out and get the ball? Because that was something that we thrived for and waited for. You know, you take pride in playing defense and being able to be a takeaway player or a takeaway team D. And as much as people put stalling down, and I can't stand to watch it myself, it is a part of the rules now, and coaches need to be able to combat that with, you know, having a good takeaway defense as well. And, you know, it's something good to have in your back pocket, obviously, and not every program does, so that's what makes it hard for them to get the ball back. Plus, so many of the rules that are in place right now are very pro-attacker or for the offensive side. So as soon as a referee knows that, hey, this team really needs the ball back, they seem to call it even tighter. Something that necessarily wouldn't have been a call earlier in the game is all of a sudden a foul towards the end because they know the team wants the ball back. So it's unfortunate kind of on all accounts, but I do think something needs to be done because it's just not very fan-friendly. And more importantly, it's not fun for the players. You know, let them play. And like I said, I would love when Cindy Timshaw was the coach at Maryland at the time and Gary Gates, the assistant, would say, okay, go get the ball now. And we would kind of get it on command. But I don't see so much of that anymore. I see teams sitting back defensively and hoping and praying for that offensive team to stop the stall, which doesn't really happen.
Right. And it's interesting because you can't – I mean, I – in the same boat as you, like, you can't fault somebody or a team for using it as a strategy because it's effective and it works and it is well within the rules to do it. But you're right, it doesn't make it fun for the fans, it doesn't make it fun for the players. Do you think the onus is more on the offense for not making a play, or do you think the onus falls on the defense to go out and pressure them? I think it was after the championship game last year, Kelly Amonte-Hiller in the post-game press conference was asked about the strategy to hang onto the ball, and she basically said, well, you know, I wouldn't call it stalling, Syracuse didn't pressure us. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Who does it really fall on to that stalling is occurring?
You know, obviously, it falls on the offensive team because it is a choice. It's a decision to hold on to the ball. But it has to fall partly on the defense, too, because, like I said, if you had players who can go out and be that takeaway defender, go put just more pressure on the ball and the adjacent attackers, it wouldn't be as easy for them to hold on to it. So it's a two-way street. It obviously starts with the offense choosing to hold on to the ball and not really challenge the cage. Or I'm sure you remember years ago when the NCAA championship was at UPenn, you know, we saw the same thing happen with Northwestern in that game. And it took forever for Virginia. I felt like it was the final 15 minutes of the game that Northwestern was holding on to the ball. But they knew that if they challenged to the goal cage and lost it, Virginia had the momentum. So it's just them trying to break up the game, and it is within the rules. But you know, I looked in the stands. I was watching the game, thinking, okay, when is Julie Myers going to send her team to go double the ball or, you know, quickly slide? And it didn't come, surprisingly, until the final few minutes of the game, when it just put a lot of pressure on her team of, okay, now we have 2 minutes to score as opposed to the 15. And you know, that's a decision that each coach makes themselves, you know, not necessarily a decision I would have made. I'd rather try and go after it early. If they score a goal, no big deal. We have another 15 minutes as opposed to 2 minutes. And, you know, each coach has their own philosophy, but it definitely is something for the offense and defense. They're both playing a part in the stalling.
Right, and it's I feel like I hear coaches now talk more about, you know, you see it more in the regular season also versus when teams kind of just did it when they were in a playoff scenario where, you know, winning meant everything. And I don't know if that's actually true or whether that's that viewpoint is more of a byproduct of the game being more visible. I mean, where it's 2013, there's games that are webcast and broadcast, and it's just a lot easier than it has been in the past for a fan or anybody to just watch a game. So I feel like as a result of that, you hear more complaints from people who are kind of fed up with the stalling aspect of things. But you know, do you think that there is more of it in the offseason, or that the amount of it has escalated? I know even this past weekend, Northwestern did it against Syracuse once they got a lead for the last 6 minutes. Princeton did it once they got a lead against Cornell. I feel like every weekend, you know, you hear somebody talking about, oh yeah, well, this team just stalled. Do you think it's becoming more common?
I do think it's becoming more common. Obviously, when you play a team that is more athletic, or, you know, they have something within their X's and O's game plan that you can't stop, and when you have possession, you know, it's a surefire way that the other team, it doesn't have the ball in their stick. And I'll never forget Sue Stahl, who used to be coach of the U.S. team at U.S. practice. She would say, listen, I don't care if we win a World Cup by one goal. When we have the ball in our stick, it's not in the other team's stick, and that's what those teams are relying on. They know that there's another part of their opponent's game that they can't stop, and so if that's what it takes to come out with the W, you know, people forget these are jobs at stake as well. You know, the coaching world isn't just about your wins and losses, and everybody goes home happy and gets a degree. You know, that's what these coaches do for a living, and obviously Kelly's built a legacy at Northwestern in such a short amount of time, and all these other programs, they just want to come out with the W, and if it falls within the rules, hey, whether it's a postseason game or just a regular season game, it matters. Now, I was down at the Duke UNC game, and it was a one-goal overtime game, and that game was going to matter for seeding for the ACC tournament, and then that's going to matter depending on how far you go in that ACC tournament, that NCAA seeding. So everything does matter, and that regular season game that maybe people didn't really think about, or like you said, see on TV or watch on a webcast, now they're seeing it, and they do matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess, you know, the natural progression of this conversation is the future. I know this is going to be a rule change year for women's lacrosse. The rule committee will sit down in the postseason, and potentially decisions could be made. There was some experimentation with a shot clock this past fall that was kind of headed up by Gary Gate, who you mentioned before, a lot of people, teams who play with it, I heard a lot of positive reviews. It was a 90-second shot clock that started when a team got possession and left their defensive 30, so starting into their transition. And from what I was told, that it didn't really force teams to speed up. It prevented them from slowing down, which I think is really the issue. Women's lacrosse, I don't think, has a pace problem naturally. It's just when teams deliberately try to hold the ball that it becomes an issue. And I know that there are some coaches that are not into the shot clock, that there are other solutions that have been proposed. What's your insight, or what do you think will happen in the off season in terms of rule changes that could take stalling out of the game?
Yeah, there's a lot of possible ideas that have been thrown around. Obviously, they've already looked into the shot clock. Some other things that were thrown around are make, you know, more lines on the field similar to men's, a smaller area where they would have to keep the ball inside of. Some coaches threw out, well, how about just keep it in their offensive 30? Obviously, that rule is pretty similar to what already happens. Most teams, when they stall, they do choose to keep it in the offensive 30, even though you can throw it all the way back to the goalkeeper if you wanted. I rarely have seen that happen, but it definitely does. And, you know, the shot clock, there's different options that were thrown around. Clearly this past fall was just one of the options, but whether it's as soon as your goalie touches the ball, or the clear start, or, you know, there's a lot of different scenarios, and the safety factor is probably the biggest concern that I may agree with. But I like the fact that it just keeps the game moving. The safety factor being that if somebody doesn't have a shot and they're just shooting, so that it counts as a shot. Obviously, in women's lacrosse, since you aren't wearing a helmet or any other big bulky equipment, you know, that could be dangerous. But then it would just lie in the hands of the referees to keep it safe. Because obviously, people nowadays, and you've seen a lot of games where dangerous propelling has been called, where somebody's just shooting the ball kind of just to shoot, and luckily for the defense, the referees are making that call and handing out yellows, saying that they're not going to tolerate that somebody not looking and just firing. Yeah. So I think that would be the best option as opposed to more lines on the field. Our game is already as confusing as can be. There's a lot of rules, a lot of judgment calls, and, you know, just making more lines and then deciding when. I think it's just going to be a little too difficult. So a shot clock and looking at what the guys did, it just makes it easier. Does that contraption on their arm look nice and fancy? No. But it gets, you know, stopped, done. So I think something that's more definitive, black and white, is ideal.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the shot clock idea a lot. I talked to Gary Gate in the off season about it, and it's just like it makes sense to me. It to me seems to be the solution to the problem that will not really alter the game as it is traditionally played all that much. All it will do is prevent teams from sitting on the ball for extended periods of time. Most coaches who experimented with it said that their offense and their natural flow of things usually got a shot off within 90 seconds. 90 seconds is a long time on the game clock. So I don't know if it's something that people want to see experimented with more. I understand that there are a lot of people in this game who are very traditionalist and kind of anti-change, and that there will be some resistance to that, but I do think it's something that needs to be addressed, and I'm very interested to see how that kind of plays out over the next few months.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about the reverse side of things. Clearly, Stony Brook did a good job of holding the ball against Maryland this year and putting out the lowest output for them offensively, and it'll be interesting to see this rule does pass. I'm not convinced that it will be a rule change for this next year. I think definitely by 2015, the next rule changing year, although I'd like to see something happen sooner. But, you know, it all lies in the hands of the college coaches and, you know, what they can agree on. Back when I was coaching, I always thought, gosh, all these votings, all these meetings, why it takes forever. And the late Diane Jippy Aiken said, my gosh, you know, it's actually a good thing that it takes us forever to make a rule change to make sure that it's done right, because there's nothing worse than making a rule and deciding, oh, it was the wrong way, we should have done it this way, which has happened in the recruiting rules whenever those have been voted on. So as long as they take their time and do it well, hey, I'm fine if they wait, but if all the coaches can be in agreement that the best thing is to the shot clock that they tested out, it's working well, and let's move forward with it or tweak it to what we didn't like, then I think it would benefit the women's game tremendously.
Right, and you bring up interesting points, obviously, with the safety issues and wanting to make a decision that you're going to be happy with long-term. So obviously those are things that are all very important, but at the same time, the idea of thinking of two more years with the current rules and considering how much we're still trying to grow the game and get the casual fan interested in the game, I'm with you on I'd rather see change a little bit sooner rather than later. So something we'll definitely keep an eye out on for sure. Sure, and we'll keep updating throughout the rest of the season and the off season, absolutely, as that becomes more of a spotlight item. Courtney, thank you so much for your insight. Great talking to you as always. We will talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Danielle.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.